what was your relationship with the estate? Because it was the Carvely Alton Hall estate.
Yeah.
Although the Carvelys in your time had long
emigrated. Long gone into Canada, yes.
What was the relationship as tenant farmers with the estate, and how was that managed, etc.?
The only contact we had and the only relationship we had was with Bernard Hurst. First and foremost, Bernard Hurst was Fred Hurst's son, and they were the estate agent for the Carvely estate in those days. And they were responsible for looking after the tenant farmers' wants and needs, and also, I suppose, to keep them in line to make sure everything was done and dusted to keep the properties as good in as good as order as they could.
And did you see them regularly?
Oh, Bernard had his office round at the Woodlands, down Farrer Lane, so we were the nearest tenant to him, so we saw him virtually every day, and so he would come round. It was a marathon job to get him to do anything, though, for him to spend, for the Carvelys to spend anything on the buildings, and the house, particularly the farmhouses. They didn't want to spend a quid when half a quid would do.
And how did the rent work? Was it a fixed amount of rent that you paid, or did it depend on how much profit you made from the business?
No, it was just an acreage levy per acre. So you're 250 acres at so much an acre.
So you could always pay the rent, as it were. That was never an issue for you in terms of
no,
the business.
No, with having been on contract to Leeds Co-op, we had the milk check every month. I remember my dad telling me at a very young age that he'd inherited £1,000 overdraft with the Midland Bank, which was a lot of money in those days. So God knows how it had got that to that state. But
so he turned that round effectively from an overdraft to a profit all the work that he did.
Yeah, so many years. It was a struggle. Eventually, we came out of the other side, but then by that time I'd long gone.
So did you, as a family, buy the farms that you've been tenants on? What happened?
No. They just moved from one tenancy to another. They were not available to be bought. Being as we were in those days, we were tenants. It was a strange feeling because me as a young boy would look at Bernard Hurst and think he was up with the Carvelys. You know, he was with the gentry. He always had a check shirt on with a tie. And he had his suit. He was more like, you know, not plus fours, but in that category. And Bernard Hurst was sort of waltzing with the Carvelys, so to speak. So we were only serfs. We were tenant farmers, you know, and that's how we looked at it.
Over time, the Carvelys sold quite a lot of land for housing development. So was the pressure on you in the farm to let parts of the farm go for development?
Well, Uncle Ron was paid compensation by the Carvelys. He got 1 year's compensation for whatever crops and acreage he had, which, as I say, the triangle up there, where the Parkways estate is. Yeah. So 1 minute we were combining the Parkways, and then the following year, Uncle Ron just had his paddock from the back of Alton School up to Holmesfield Lane, and that's all he had. Sorry, he had that piece over that side before you get to Eshel Lane. And then it two fields, which is all woodland, between Eshel Lane and the railway, and Eshel Lane and the pit, which he grew his barley for his feed for his pigs. After that, they took the home paddock and the buildings, and they converted the buildings like they've done with Greenlop Farm. They kept so many of the buildings intact and renovated them, including the barns and the piggeries. The old barn that looks onto Dr. Gutson's and Mrs. Glazebrook's, they kept all those, but they also built new ones in Manor Farm as well. And then eventually, my Uncle Ron died, then Auntie Peggy died, and then they took the house. They had the house then.
So what was the relationship then between you as farmers and the other big thing locally, which was the pit? It's quite interesting, isn't it, that there's such a lot of farmland near a very big industrial thing.
Yeah.
So did you have an ongoing relationship with Waterhaig Pit and the people who work there, etc.?
Only that they used to bring the pit ponies up once a year for the fortnight's holiday, and my dad let them go in the walled paddock down Farrow Lane over the bridge. That was a small paddock, and my dad used to let them bring the pit ponies and leave them there for a fortnight while the pit closed. And that was the only sort of relationship that we had with Walter Haig.
So you didn't have any problems with miners and poaching and things like that?
Up on Cobourg, the cardboard city, dumping prams and you know what, right, mangles and all sorts in the fields. So we had to walk around before we could combine and fetch them all out. And of course they used to, we tried to grow potatoes in the sugar hills. They pinched them before they even grew. So we didn't do anything with the land above Cardboard City, and that's why it's like it is today. We stopped ploughing it, and we stopped. Even my dad said it's not worth it. I would be maybe 13. I was 13 when I first started driving the combine. I could sort of drive anything as long as I could reach the pedals. And I got driving the combine when my dad was away with the buses, and we had corn ready for cutting. And it was my dad's father-in-law. He wasn't my granddad, but he treated me as his grandson. And he came to me one day and he said, this corn's been ready, you know, a week. And he said, it's such a shame. Do you think we could get the combine out? Do you think you could get the combine out? Because it was a bag, what we called a bagger combine. Manster on the back and bag the corn in those days. I would be about 13, and we'd cut this field, and we went in what we call the pit field, and we were nearly in the middle, and we were going along quite nicely, and all of a sudden, from being 6 foot in the air on a platform driving, there was an almighty whoosh, and I'm sat looking at the stubble, and Grandad fell over, and we were in a hole. And that was subsistence from the pit. And that's the only time that we knew of it.
And what did your dad say?
Well, he wasn't very pleased, but we had to have a crane to lift it out. And then for weeks and weeks, the dumpers were coming across the road into the field to fill the hole up. From the pit. And instead of it going onto the pit slag heaps that were in those days beyond towards the railway line, they were coming out and tipping it in our field, down the hole. And they went for weeks and weeks before they filled it up.
It must have been a bit of a shock, it was shock a bit, when you fell in the hole.
A bit of a shock. We were very, very lucky. It didn't go down any further. So that's the only incident I know. But we know subsidence by the fact that the contours of the land have fallen.
So just tell me about this. So how has this land off Fleet Lane changed since you were a boy then?
Well, it's gone to the point where you can actually see where the coal's been at the great depth, greater depths than the sort of 18 inches. You can see where it's maybe been 3, 4, or 5 foot deep.
That's because the land on the surface has dropped.
The path that goes from Fleet Lane up through to across Methley Lane and right up to Clumpcliff, that's well above the field height, and it used to be level. That field, you couldn't go off the top into the next field. It was all level. We used to drive straight through, but now it's gone down, maybe 6 foot in the middle of the field.
So, having grown up in Oulton and lived on its farm, what do you feel about the village and the way things have changed around here?
Well, it's like everything else. Leeds has come into swollen out into the suburbs, and there's an influx of across-the-board population, the wealthy, the not-so-wealthy. I think that Oulton has upgraded. The properties have upgraded to a tremendous amount, from North Lane right through to the cottages. The older buildings that have been smartened up and renovated to the point that this village, I think, has come up. When you look round, I mean, my Uncle Ron farmed the manor and his nearest field was the Croft. The Croft now is full of houses. Greenland Farm, the farm buildings are all homes, they're all residences. Sometimes it's hard and sometimes you've got to move on. And it's not for the worst that the buildings are being used, it's for the better. I would have had a different outlook if I'd have been the farmer when I had to leave. like my brother did. He said to me, what did you feel when it... He thought I didn't know about the farm and the buildings and what have you, but I did. And so he took me down Farrell Lane and we drove round and he said, what do you reckon? And I just said to him, well, I lost it as a farm 17 and a half years ago, so it doesn't have that effect on me as it would on you. But I still think that I hate it when good land is taken for houses, when there's land that's not beneficial or not productive because of, well, it's money. It's big business. The land adjacent to the farm, which was pasture, rural pasture, we were never allowed to plough it. Now it's ploughed. The footpath is still a footpath by law, but the pastures are now agricultural, not pasture. That's where we kept the cows, and we weren't allowed to plough it.